It's Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette, and it is Friday. Time for our reporter roundtable. This is when we bring in a panel of Idaho journalists to get us updated on the news that made headlines this week. Our guests today, Mike Sharp with KIVI, Six on Your Side, Nicole Foy with Idaho Statesman, and James Dawson with Boise State Public Radio News. Welcome, everyone.
Hey, Gemma.
Thank you.
Hey, Jimmy, let's start with getting up to date on the phased reopening of Idaho and where we are and kind of what the next steps are, because it should be changing fairly soon.
Right. So right now we're in phase one. We're about halfway through that as we talk here on Friday. The next kind of check-in period we have is May 16th, which is a week from tomorrow. And if we do move into phase two, and in order to do so, you would need to keep showing a downward trend in positive coronavirus cases or a drop in ER visits from folks who have COVID-like symptoms and make sure we have all of the hospital gear that we need. Then at that point, Idaho would be able to open up restrictions on public and private gatherings of 10 people or less with physical distancing. Those would now be allowed. Right now, that's not. Restaurants could fully reopen once their plans are approved by local health districts. Indoor gyms and hair salons would also be allowed to open. But at that point in phase two, still bars or large venues would not be allowed to be open.
And then, Mike, as we know, as Jimmy was just talking about, where we're still, I mean, a lot of things are still closed. So this has had a huge financial impact on so many people. Can you talk to us about navigating the wait for benefits that folks are eligible for?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that wait is one of the biggest stories that we're seeing related to the coronavirus outbreak and the state shutdown. You know, the governor made some news in his last press conference, kind of minimizing the struggle a lot of Idahoans are having in accessing unemployment benefits and the benefits that people are expecting to try to keep them afloat. And what we've found is dozens and dozens of people are emailing us begging for some sort of relief, some sort of assistance in getting hold of the state government. And it's not a simple issue. We have our reporter, Madeline White, who's been leading the effort on our Rebound Idaho team. Rebound Idaho's what we're calling it, and just happened to also be what the governor's calling the effort as well. and in her contact, Madeline's contact with the state government, the Department of Labor specifically, there's this push and pull of the state not having adequate staffing. And how would they have adequate staffing to handle an unprecedented event? Mm-hmm. You know, your news story that aired just before we came on the air talking about the fact that more unemployed people in the United States of America than during the Great Depression. We're talking just massive amounts of people who are calling and emailing and trying to get answers. Now, they're doing their best, according to them. They're making calls. They're tracking things down. They're trying to confirm exactly what the benefits should be for each individual person. But there are still individuals who are telling us they filed the day of the original shutdown and they've yet to receive a call. Mm. They've yet to receive an email back. And it's all well and good to say, hey, look, if you keep filing your unemployment, you will receive eventually a lump sum of the total amount that you are due. And that sounds great. But if you do not currently have any money, it doesn't help you now. And that's where this desperate sense is coming from. Mm-hmm. A lot of Idahoans that are, maybe they had a little bit of savings or they had money on credit cards. That money's either run out or is currently running out. And that concern is growing.
Well, and Mike, you make a good point that, okay, that's all well and good that you'll get a lump sum. But I mean, let's just take rent, for example, right? May 1st has come and gone. May 5th has come and gone. You know, usually there's a grace period right there. So it does, if you don't have money to pay rent, you don't have money to pay rent. It doesn't matter if you get a lump sum or not.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, it's easy to say, try to save as much money as you can to pay that rent. There are programs that are out there that are hoping or helping benefit these people who maybe for me, one of the big things that benefited me is student loan forgiveness for this short period. during the COVID-19 outbreak. And sure, that helps. But when it boils down to it, you're paying maybe more than you ever have for groceries. You are making food when you otherwise would be relying on the school system for lunches, mm-hmm. and possibly even dinners. For low-income families, the access to these programs hasn't gotten any easier. And it's really easy for people who are familiar with bureaucracy to use a lot of acronyms and repeat these acronyms and talk about the different programs which are available. But if you are an individual who does not have an understanding and an insider knowledge of how these programs work, it's incredibly frustrating. You do not understand necessarily that your unemployment benefit, the declined unemployment benefit, is because of the CARES Act, and you will later get that money because of the CARES Act, maybe 2 months or 3 months down the road. That doesn't make sense to you because you don't know the difference between the CARES Act or typical unemployment because you've never done mm-hmm. this before. And that's where we're getting caught in a lot of people tripping up with acronyms and not understanding these programs. And it's not because, you know, there's an ignorance there among Idaho's population. It's just because this is affecting, based on what the Idaho Department of Labor is telling us, a brand new subsect of Idaho's population, which has never had to request these benefits before.
Right. Well, and you're right. It's not about being smart or not. It's about just not understanding the system. And exactly. And Jimmy, I want to talk a little bit more about the reopening itself, because the governor made a little bit of news this week. He was on Idaho Matters Wednesday, and he talked, you know, he and I discussed the reopening. One of the things that came up was what happens if a business violates these phases, because we are aware of a handful of businesses, right, Jimmy, that have opened when before they're supposed to.
Right. Right. Yeah. And sorry about those technical difficulties. Hopefully I'm sounding better now.
You sound great. It's not your problem. It's just okay. Where we are in the world right now.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're totally right. And he was quick to say during that interview too, that this is only a small handful of businesses that are kind of bucking the trend and kind of going ahead of their place in line to reopen under his reopening plan. So he did say that there are new enforcement measures that the state can take, namely revoking someone's professional license or liquor license, right? And liquor licenses aren't cheap, to say the least, depending on where you are in the state. And so, he says he expects the vast majority of businesses to follow this. It's unfair to the other, those other businesses' competition for them to reopen too soon. But he's also still relying kind of on local jurisdictions a little bit too. And we've seen that they've been really hesitant to enforce any aspect of these, right, either the stay at home order or even potentially the phased reopening plan.
Well, and in fact, I mean, he's got his own party. I mean, not the entire party, but there are people within his political party who are coming after him and basically disagreeing with him. One being Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeehan. And within that interview, Jimmy, I flat out asked him, you know, what's it like to not have her on board? And he said, you know, it's not easy, but, right. You went a little bit farther, correct, trying to get comment from the Lieutenant Governor?
I did. And I never heard back from her office, because also during that exchange that you had with the governor, you asked him, you know, well, when was the last time you talked to her? And he said that, well, they normally have a weekly scheduled call, but for the past 2 weeks, they have not been able to get on the same page. Again, the lieutenant governor position is a part-time job in Idaho, and she has been seen at different places across the state, whether it was at a rally that went virtual. It was supposed to be in Rexburg, saying that all jobs are essential to, I believe it was last Friday, kind of up where I'm originally from in Kendrick in north central Idaho. There was a brewery there that reopened. The Idaho State Police detective, apparently, according to Lieutenant Governor McGeehan, went in and gave the owners a warning that this is not, you know, allowed under the phase reopening plan. But she was there with the GOP state chair, former Congressman Raul Labrador, too, in celebrating this, and that, yes, every business should be open and there should be no restrictions like this.
Yeah, and we should note that the governor in that interview, that conversation that I had with him on Wednesday, said that, you know, that she has not found time in her schedule to meet with him, which was an interesting way to put it. Nicole, in the midst of everything that is going on around coronavirus, I think it's very important that we discuss truly the disproportionate effect that this virus is having on Idaho's Latino population.
Yeah, Idaho has been a little bit behind the curve as far as releasing several different aspects of demographic data. And one of those has been releasing race and ethnicity data, breakdowns for confirmed cases of coronavirus. Finally, the state Department of Health and Welfare released that information on Wednesday, and we saw some numbers that are kind of mirroring what's happening across the country, which is that even though Latinos in Idaho are only 12 to 13% of the state's population, right now, that at least based on this preliminary data, they make up about 23% of confirmed coronavirus cases. And that's really concerning just because of that apparent disproportionate effect. And also because of we see as the longer this goes on in other parts of the country, Latinos, African-Americans, generally communities of color are being incredibly hard hit by the coronavirus. And a lot of that ends up being tied to how many of them are working essential jobs, and also how many of them are getting the information they need in the language they can understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you've brought this up before, Nicole, when you've been on the program, and I was going to just ask you that, is part of it, and you know, a language barrier. And that is not an excuse, because every citizen should be getting the proper information. But I know, you know, you had said it's not just like the language barrier, it's new terminology, right? So it's and making sure that everyone is getting this information.
Yeah, and just like you know, many other Idahoans across the state, Latinos in Idaho don't always live near live in an area where they can get great access to medical care. They don't always have great access to testing, especially as testing availability has still been very much a narrative in as we go through the pandemic here in Idaho. And also, they are far more likely to be underinsured, far more likely to not be able to devote as much as their income to medical care. And honestly, statistically, we're seeing across the country, and some new numbers coming out as well here in Idaho, is that especially when you're looking at the fact that agriculture has been running the entire time as an essential job, and many Latinos, especially in Southern Idaho, fill ag jobs, whether in meatpacking plants or in the fields or working in dairies, they're still going out. They're still feeding their families. They're still probably having more interaction with people than others who are able to, you know, work from home in office jobs. And so it's a really important consideration to take. And like you mentioned, it's not just a language barrier, but of course it can have a really big impact, especially when it comes to people who really should be receiving some of this information in Spanish, because if that's their first language. But it's also not just about, you know, how to cover your cough. It's about what's open in your community. Right. Where have there been hotspots in your county? That's really important information that's not always making its way to Spanish.
Jimmy, I want to talk about something that I think is an incredibly sensitive topic, and you have been reporting on this, and this is how some people are comparing the shutdown, not just here in Idaho but across the country, to the Nazi regime, and this is frankly shocking.
Yeah, I mean, the historian that I spoke to, his name is Thomas Kuhne. He directs the Center for Holocaust and Genocide Studies at Clark University in Massachusetts. And I mean, the words he used to describe it were extremely stupid for this. and that it holds no basis in historical reality. So just some kind of context for Idaho's situation right now. I guess most recently, you had last Saturday, Ammon Bundy at a protest at the Idaho Capitol, who basically told people that they have to stand up to either the state government or the federal government if they are implementing these kinds of orders. Otherwise, they could end up like the millions of Jewish victims who died during the Holocaust. And he's not the only one. And you have sitting state representatives, too, mm-hmm. that are kind of leaping in on this. You've got on Facebook, Representative Judy Boyle, who represents the Midvale area. She said that a private business requiring customers to wear masks was, quote, too similar to not allowing Jews to shop where they were required to wear the yellow star. And then you had Representative Heather Scott a couple weeks ago say that declaring businesses, you know, either essential or non-essential is basically like separating people and putting them on trains to concentration camps like in Nazi Germany. And so the comparisons are pretty stark, you know, when you actually look at history. Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about a mass genocide that killed 6 million Jews plus millions more other minority people in twisted and just horrific ways, right? And if you look at what's happened in Idaho, you have the only thing that I've been able to find is one citation for a woman in Rathdrum where police said that they gave her multiple warnings to shut down a yard sale that she was having. And that's the only real enforcement that I've seen here. The professor that I talked to, he said that, you know, the ultimate consequence of this kind of rhetoric is that it desensitizes Americans to, you know, not just the realities of the Holocaust, but also kind of losing a sense of reality and their mm-hmm. ability to see other problems.
Well, and then Jimmy, we did have the case in Meridian where the mother was arrested by police because she was asked numerous times, the video is out there if you have not seen it, numerous times by police to not be on the playground at a park.
Yeah, she could be in the park. Yeah, exactly.
She could be in the park. And within that video, you heard Nazi rhetoric.
You did. And she was, we should say that she was also just charged with trespass, not a violation of the governor's order. But certainly the protest that they staged there was over the stay at home order and the restrictions that Meridian mm-hmm. placed on their parks. And so it's, you know, the professor I talked to, he said it's obviously not a new phenomenon. These kind of comparisons have been happening for years and years and years. But it doesn't make them any less wrong, right? they're right. Just completely factually incorrect.
Well, and let's be clear, the Nazi regime, it was a government sponsored targeting of a specific race or a religion. This is a virus. This is not a specific targeting of a race or a religion.
Yep. And the fact that, you know, you're right. The government methodically over a series of years, the Nazi government anyway, first tried to kick Jews out of Germany, then Europe, and then decided, well, let's kill all 11 million of them. And they got 6 million of them.
Yeah. And you know what? We're not supposed to sit here and we're not supposed to give our opinion. But in this instance, you just don't make that comparison. And beyond that, there is so many other things, how people are being affected. And we understand that there is frustration out there and that people's lives are being devastated by this. And Mike, part of that is what you talked about with having to wait for these benefits and not knowing when they're coming. And within that, we're also learning more about who is eligible and who is not for these Rebound Idaho cash grants. First off, can you tell us what these cash grants are and then the eligibility?
Right. So it was one of the big stories that came out of the governor's last press conference, acknowledging that there would be a new program specific to Idaho, giving grants to businesses that are trying to make ends meet during this time. You know, as I mentioned the last time I was talking, the federal government, the state government, the different acronyms that are floating around with these different programs, it's really difficult to draw those lines and figure it out. Madeline White did a tremendous job in her story breaking down the difference between the SBA loans, the PPP loans. Those are both federal programs. And now these local state programs. We talked to a man from named Jake McCormick from Caldwell. I believe it was Jake McCormick. No, it wasn't Jake McCormick. Sorry. There was another person we talked to. I believe they were from Caldwell, who shared with us this frustration of calling and trying to get PPP or SBA loans, going through the process of applying, only to find out that a felony he was convicted with 15 years ago was keeping him as a business owner from getting access to those grants. So what we wanted to find out was whether or not these local grants, the Rebound Idaho grants, were being limited in the same way. And what we found out is that no, they're not. So there is access to these individuals who may have felonies on their record, but are still operating businesses locally. They can access these grants and they can use them to help, you know, pay rents, pay salaries, and try to stay afloat during this time.
Good for you guys for tracking that down, Mike. I mean, I can't imagine the devastation, right, of going through that process and then finding out that you're not eligible for that part of it.
Right. And anybody familiar with government programs knows there are a lot of weeds, right? You've got to figure out eligibility requirements. And if you are familiar with the programs, even then it can be a really complicated and difficult process. If you're not familiar with the programs, it can feel almost random about whether or not you are able to get access to those programs. So he reached out to us, shared his story. We were really lucky. We were able to get into the weeds. And that's really the point of the Idaho Rebound at Idaho News 6, is trying to get into the weeds and help very specific problems get answered. And what we're finding is, and I mentioned the people who were kind of in the queue, the people waiting to hear back from the Idaho Department of Labor or from the federal government on some of the programs that are being offered, is a lot of people are in these weeds. A lot of people have complicated stories or complicated issues surrounding themselves or their business that don't make it as easy as going to a website's FAQ and finding the answer to their problem. What they're doing is just kind of treading water and trying to contact whomever they can to try to find these answers. It's just, it's not easy. We found from the governor's office yesterday that there's no question they are getting asked more directly to the governor's office with phone calls and emails than questions specifically related to unemployment, because nobody looks at the FAQ, or very few people look at the FAQs and see themselves in those answers, because there is so much gray area.
Well, I was just going to say that life from all of us is never black and white, right? So that does make it more difficult. And speaking of the government, Nicole, it's 2020, and we all wish it would go away, but it's 2020. and because of that, we're supposed to be in the middle of a U.S. census. I mean, every 10 years, the U.S. census
surprise.
Comes out. Surprise. Hey, remember, that's going on too. So where are we in that process?
Yeah, so census staff were kind of thrown into a massive problem, since they were really starting to kick off a specific part of their census outreach and getting people to respond that relies on census staff physically dropping off forms at people's households that either have unreliable mail access, or they don't get mail to their house, or their address is maybe not easy to find. That they had about 3 days of that before the country pretty much shut down. So because Idaho, along with a couple of other states, are among the first to reopen a little bit more fully than other states, Idaho and Alaska, actually in the western region, which is overseen by Los Angeles, are among the first that have started seeing census staff back out in communities dropping off these forms that allow you to answer via mail, or of course you use the code and go online. So you're especially going to start seeing that. I know there were some in Boise as well, but you're especially going to start seeing that happening in more of the state's more isolated areas, especially the ones that have incredibly low response rates right now. We're talking so, Nicole, 0 to 5%.
So is this like actually in person dropping off information?
Yeah, they are. They will be dropping it off at on your doorstep, but some caveats. No one's knocking on the door. All staff will be wearing masks and gloves. There is zero contact. And another thing too, that the spokesman I spoke to at the census wanted to emphasize, was that something to remember about how the Census Bureau usually hires staff, especially for these more isolated areas of Idaho. They hire within the community. So they're not flying in people for the most part, as far as we can tell. They're not bringing in people from outside of the state or even from Boise and sending them to Salmon and McCall. These are people that are hired from within the community, and they are following all of the precautions with all of the PPE that they can, that they have available to them. But it's, you're going to start seeing more census forms show up, because that's an incredibly important way that some areas of Idaho usually get those census forms mailed to them. I think the stat they gave that best covers it is 83% of Clark County usually gets their census forms this way. Wow. And again, census staff had about 3 days to do this stuff before they had to shut down with the rest of the country.
And we should note, Nicole, I mean, this isn't just about, you know, oh, let's see, you know, if a state has gained population or lost population. I mean, this is based on the federal funding that you get. It could affect how many, you know, Congress people that you have coming from your state. I mean, these numbers really matter.
It really makes a difference, especially for so many areas of Idaho that have seen an incredible amount of growth, that they get an accurate census count so they can get the right amount of federal funds allocated for road construction. It's also really important for areas that have large populations that speak another language besides English, because that comes into how you're going to follow requirements of the Voting Rights Act. It's wide ranging, and it all relies on making sure that every person who's living in the United States gets counted. And of course, coronavirus has thrown a gigantic wrench into that. Yeah.
Mike, where are we with the ag industry in regards to the SBA opening up disaster loans?
Following the way agriculture has been affected by COVID-19, we've seen stories about milk producers dumping milk down the drains, potato farmers who are either just leaving potatoes out in the fields or donating them in mass. And so we've kind of dug in to see exactly which programs they're seeing benefits from. So the economic injury disaster loans coming from the SBA, they were originally prohibited from agriculture or receiving those loans based on the traditional form of those loans. They couldn't get access to them. And so recently the federal government kind of broke that down and enabled these people to get access to them. The PPP loans, they're still getting $10,000. And while that's a forgivable loan that benefits people in real time, the Idaho Dairymen's Association is telling us a lot of these large dairies are losing up to $10,000 a day because of just a lack of demand for this milk, with restaurants not having dine-in services, without schools providing milk for kids. There's this huge chunk of the demand that's gone away, and they're just not able to process it. We asked the question specifically about dairies, you know, what kind of programs would there be available to shift the production and change from maybe producing for schools to producing for, you know, local people to drink the milk. And it's just not that easy. It's not as easy to walk into a factory and say, hey, we're going to shift this giant production facility from producing it this way to producing it that way. And so what they've had to do is just kind of, you know, dump it down the drain. But what we are seeing is the federal government through the USDA is also offering separate loans, or not separate loans. They are purchasing a lot of this product and as a commodity, and enabling these farmers a little bit of extra income. But Rick Narabout from the Idaho Dairymen's Association says, I mean, this is, it's going to have a profound economic impact on the industries related to agriculture for a long time coming. We've seen farms that are never going to open up again. They're closing because of the current situation. Maybe they were barely staying afloat before all this happened, and now it's an untenable situation. They cannot survive anymore. So it'll be interesting to see how those deficiencies in the marketplace are filled looking into the future.
And Jimmy, state tax revenue is down, but can you tell us what that really means?
Yeah. I mean, it's not looking great on its face, right?
Right.
So tax receipts were down about $470 million from projections made in January. But you can go ahead and catch your breath. That's mostly because of the fact that the governor decided to push the deadline for people to file their taxes until June 15th. And that also applies to corporations. So that's where most of that kind of hit is coming from. And they expect to collect, you know, a good amount from that, since that was all income based on last year's earnings, right?
Gotcha.
So coronavirus did not affect that. Something though, that there were a couple things actually that, you know, might not be the best. So the sales tax revenue was down about $4-ish million or so. And that's despite a surge in sales when we had the last half of the month, we had the stay-at-home order put in place, people kind of stocking up heavily on supplies, toilet paper, if you were hoarding that, that went into the sales tax. But it's probably going to be down next month, just because people were kind of, you know, at home and not really shopping. But for the rest of the fiscal year, they think that the books will be balanced, or they could have, you know, $50 million surplus. But something that we're definitely taking a look at is that income tax withholdings for that month were about flat. They were down 0.5% or so. Mm-hmm. But they're going to fall with the 118,000 Idahoans who filed for unemployment during the last 6 weeks of the pandemic. So next fiscal year, which starts July 1st, that's when we're really going to see, you know, whether or not we need to dip into rainy day funds to kind of weather this storm.
And Nicole, very quickly, because we're running out of time, maybe some good news. The murder hornets haven't made their way to Idaho yet.
Yeah, we're just going to call it good news because we need some. And
we
the Idaho State Department of Agriculture has been receiving some very concerned calls, some from constituents who thought that they might have seen it, seen the murder hornet, the Asian giant hornet that you're hearing is destroying beehives in Washington. It is not here in Idaho yet. We don't know if it will come. They're still trying to do their best. They get a lot of information and tips each year about invasive species. They're on the lookout. If you see one, you should tell the Department of Ag. But right now, Idaho is murder hornet free, as far as we know.
Hey, well, you know what? Why not? Earthquakes, pandemics. Why not a murder hornet? Why not? Hey guys, thanks so much for taking some time out of your day. We've been talking with our reporter roundtable, Mike Sharp with Idaho News 6, Nicole Foy with the Idaho Statesman, and James Dawson with Boise State Public Radio News. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jim.
Up next, honoring Boise State University graduates, this is Idaho Matters.